Welcome to What's the Tea with Ministry,
where we spill the tea on the Jesuit and Mercy mission at the University of Detroit Mercy,
bringing you mission-centered conversation through storytelling, reflection, and community connection all over a cup of tea.
Hosted by University Ministry and your student co-host.
That's us. I'm Anna Lawler, University Minister.
And I'm Margot Iwu, your student co-host.
Today, we're going to be speaking with Sister Helen Marie Burns. Sister Helen Marie is a Sister of Mercy, and she is a native of Independence, Iowa, and holds a master's degree in English from the University of Wisconsin and a doctoral degree in religion from the University of Iowa.
She served for 17 years in administrative roles within the Sisters of Mercy of the Union, which concluded in 1991 as the organization joined with other Mercy congregations to form the Sisters of Mercy of the Americas. In June 1999, she won election to a six-year term as vice president of the Institute of the Sisters of Mercy of the Americas.
Following her tenure in congregational leadership, she returned to academia as vice president of mission integration at Mount Aloysius College in Crescent, Pennsylvania.
She now serves on the board of trustees at Detroit Mercy as a representative of the Sisters of Mercy.
Well, welcome, Sister Helen Marie. We're so excited to have you here today. As I shared with you earlier before we started recording, here on What's the Tea with Ministry, our podcast, we always like to sit down over a cup of tea. And today we're recording on Zoom, so we don't have our cups of tea in front of us. But the reason we do this is because there's the longstanding tradition that I'm sure you're familiar with from the Sisters of Mercy and from Catherine McCauley specifically about sitting down with a cup of tea and talking about your day. And so much of that is a part of what we want our podcast to be about. And so instead of asking you what tea I served you today, I'm just going to ask you what your favorite type of tea is and when do you like to drink tea?
Oh, right. Good. Thank you. It's a delight, Margot and Anna, to be with you this afternoon. And although I have a strong Irish background, I'm really not a tea drinker. But if I drink tea, I like to have the Earl Grey tea. And what I like most is iced tea in the summertime, and especially sun tea. And to put a little more point to the story of Catherine McCauley and the tea, it actually is a story from her deathbed. When Catherine was dying, both she and the congregation were quite aware that she was dying. She had been ill with tuberculosis for a number of years, and so it was not a surprise. But she also knew that as the foundress, her going was going to be very hard on a very young community. So she said to the person who was caring for her on her deathbed, "When I'm gone, be sure the sisters have a comfortable cup of tea." Mm-hmm. So the whole idea of gathering around when we're together, a cup of tea, goes back to that story. And then, of course, it's been enlarged as the years have gone on. But I'm glad, I'm delighted by the title and delighted that you picked up on that little bit of our story. Thank you.
Wonderful. Well, one of the reasons we have invited you here today is to talk about the Sisters of Mercy and to talk about Catherine McCauley. We have recorded an episode with a Jesuit priest talking a little bit about St. Ignatius as one of the founders of Detroit Mercy. And of course, we have to talk about Catherine in order to talk about the other part of our charism and the mercy charism at our university. And so we want to start today by just asking you, in your words, who is Catherine McCauley and why is she important to us?
Well, let's start with the last question. Why is she important? It's all about storytelling. You started earlier on talking about that. You know, storytelling is really what holds together human communities. We gather around our roots and we know our history and we know our identity really because we tell one another stories. And think about storytelling, it's not just about remembering, but we remember in order to engage in our own lifetime with the energy of the story. So storytelling has power. It has a certain energy to it. Now, there's good news for the University of Detroit Mercy. because it has two founding stories in terms of two different individuals and really different traditions who have come together out of their own common interest in education. So the story of Catherine McCauley is important to the University of Detroit Mercy because it's connected to the Sisters of Mercy, and the story of Catherine is important to the Sisters of Mercy. But it's also important to the university because there's a very fine administrator, Robert Greenleaf, who comes out of the Quaker tradition, really. And he says, and I believe it's true, he says, unless an institution stays in touch with its story, it will lose its power to positively impact the world in which it finds itself. So there's a really good reason for keeping the stories going and starting with the founding story. Now, the other thing about Catherine's important, but we also want to remember that we're all important because the story of mercy continues. Mm-hmm. And by virtue of the fact that persons step onto a campus that has the story of Ignatius, the story of Catherine, they get involved in the story and they make their own contribution. So again, storytelling is dynamic, let's put it that way. It's not just about the past. It's about the past. It's about the present. It's about the future. Now, specifically, let's talk about Catherine as an individual who lived and died, and we're trying to keep her spirit alive. Mm-hmm. Catherine was born in Dublin, Ireland. And in many ways, Catherine was a quite ordinary woman who simply made use of the talents that she had and the circumstances of her life. She was not a woman of great spiritual visions or a great dramatic conversion. She was a woman of faith. She was a Roman Catholic woman. And she, in her mid-years, actually, when she was 50 plus, understood that God was calling her not only to serve the people of her time in education, in social work, in visitation of the sick, but to prepare a group of persons who could carry that work into the future after she was gone. So 1778, she was born, and she actually had a fairly ordinary but somewhat traumatic childhood. She lost her father when she was about 8 or 9 years old, and then her mother died when she was in her late teens. So after the death of her mother, she experienced a bit of homelessness in the sense that she and her siblings were split up. And she went to live with relatives. The first home she went to, they ran into financial difficulties, and then she had to move to a second home, again, of relatives. So she understood the idea of certain rootlessness, and she understood the idea of loss as a very young woman. She had the good fortune to meet the Callahans, and you have a Callahan Hall, but that is not related to the Sisters of Mercy, but it could be, because the William Callahan and his wife Catherine actually took Catherine in as a domestic. So she served as their manager of their household. Catherine Callahan was an invalid, and she wasn't able to do the management of the household. And Catherine helped her and then was attentive to the needs of an estate because they were a fairly well-to-do family. And they were Quaker, so there's a nice Quaker influence on Catherine. And there's also strong Church of England influence on Catherine because many of her relatives were not Catholic. So now I can get real lost in the story of Catherine McCauley, so help me out here if I need to sharpen it. But at any rate, let me just say that she maintained her own Catholicism, oftentimes in an atmosphere that was not necessarily did not treasure it in the way that she did. Mm-hmm. But she also learned in that experience how to appreciate the various faith traditions. So she had a comfortable appreciation for the Church of England and also for the Quaker family she was with. And that is also seen in some of the early works of the sisters who watched that in Catherine. But the Callahans were the source of the means for her to really do the work that she wanted to do with her life. So when they died, she was in her early 50s, and the woman died first, and then the husband died second, but they left all of their estate to her. So she had now, for the first time in her life, a freedom, and she had means. Mm-hmm. And she decided she would use the monies, which were pretty significant for her time, to build a house in Dublin on Bagot Street, which was an important street because on one side of Bagot Street, you had those who had much, and on the other side of Bagot Street, across the little river, you had those who had little. And her idea was build the house here, serve those who have little, but do so in a way in the eye of those who have much so that they can see how they can use their wealth on behalf of other people. Now, as you know, lots of details in that. But so 1827 is when she moved into the Bagot Street house. Now, she was already doing works of mercy. I mean, she was already teaching young children the catechism. She was already out in the neighborhoods. So there were people who knew her, and the women especially began to join her. And some of those women began to coalesce around a vision that later became real in the founding of the Sisters of Mercy. So they committed themselves to a lifestyle together within the Roman Catholic tradition as a religious congregation, meaning they took vows of poverty, chastity, obedience, and, unusual for their day, a fourth vow, service of the poor, sick, and ignorant. And so that was the beginning of the Sisters of Mercy. And the actual congregation officially sanctioned by the Roman Catholic Church in 1831. So that was 4 years after Catherine founded the Bagot Street house. And then Catherine had 10 years before her death in 1841. She died on November 11th, 1841. And rather remarkably, the inspiration that was her life in the Roman Catholic Church, certain women and men are inspired by God to do a certain work on behalf and within the church. And that's called charism in officially, we speak of it as a gift or a calling. There are various ways. But Catherine's gift or charism or calling was so alive in her and in the early women of mercy that the congregation perdured. That's all we can say, into the present 21st century in several countries and several continents of the world. Mm-hmm. So let me stop there. I could say a lot more about Catherine because I love to tell the story, but that's about enough. Good.
Yeah. And that's all wonderful too. And it's an important story, and we want to have as much of the information about her life as we can, because that's the purpose of our podcast, is sharing the mission, sharing our identity as a school that is both Jesuit and Mercy. How are we knowing the stories? And you talked so eloquently about the importance as being storytelling. And so mm-hmm. I think it's wonderful.
So how has Catherine and Mercy spirituality impacted or influenced your life as a Sister of Mercy?
Well, I would have to say probably totally as a Sister of Mercy. Now, let me say, when someone like myself enters a religious congregation, of course, the motivations and your understanding of what you're doing are limited to your age and your experience. So I had, as a young person, had been educated by the Sisters of Mercy. And what I knew about them was they were good teachers. And my mother was an educator, and I wanted to be an educator. I wanted to be a teacher. I also knew that they were welcoming people. They were warm. They were human. They were interactive. And when I got into the congregation, well, the other thing I knew, because I, like Catherine, lost my father when I was young. I was 8 or 9 years old. And they were there in the house. They didn't just wait till I got to the church or the family got to the church. So they did the works of mercy. And I know that my mother, as a widow raising 3 children, we didn't know it at the time, but I learned later, of course, was getting assistance from the sisters. So that was happening. So in that context, when I was a senior, I began to understand that maybe I should try this lifestyle out. After I got into the congregation, of course, I heard the story of Catherine. I learned that the sisters were about the works of mercy, which is visiting the sick and feeding the hungry and clothing the naked, the kind of human basic needs, but also about the spiritual works of mercy, which are about counseling the doubtful and educating the ignorant and being present to those who are mourning. So it's a life of service. And so I became much more attuned to the breadth of the work of the congregation. I also learned that hospitality was a piece of Catherine's spirit and one that the congregation in its history and in its movement into time kept alive. So that was the, I saw as welcoming in the congregation, it's named hospitality, openness, drawing people in, going out to people, being present to them. The other piece that I think was attracted, although again, I didn't know it until after I entered the congregation, but Catherine and the congregation and its development through history, a strong combination of what we call contemplation and action. Now, you probably heard that also from whoever talked about the Jesuit. And it's so that's a common element in our two congregations that, as Catherine would say, it's the presence in the world and in the marketplace that is the connection to God. Prayer and retreat and the time apart is preparation, and it's maybe you might even say strengthening. But the works are where, as active congregation, we are to meet our God. So that's quite a difference from a congregation whose main work is the prayer of the church. And they do spend their time in the chapel and in the liturgical rhythm of the year. So action in contemplation. Now, not action without contemplation. So it's not just jumping into every need of the world and getting swallowed up and forgetting that there's a God taking care of all of us, you know. Now, as an educator, I loved it because Catherine herself early on was an educator and valued greatly the influence of young people, again, in terms of the spirit of hospitality and openness to the needs of others. So I'll stop there. Okay, good. Does that help, Margo?
Perfect.
Oh, that's a good answer.
Okay,
yeah, good. That was a great answer. One of the unique things I think we talk a lot about at the university is the fact that we are sponsored by two different religious orders. And I've asked the exact same question of Father Gilbert, who acted as our representative of the Jesuits. And for you, being on the board of trustees, this probably in many ways comes up for you as well, as what is it like to hold both the Jesuit and Mercy charisms, the spirituality of both of those, in the work that you do on the board for Detroit Mercy?
A very good question, Anna and Margo. There's a challenge there because there are two stories and every story has its nuances, but it's no more a challenge than when you think of all the stories that come onto the campus. I mean, every person, each of you represents a different story, and you represent a different group of people whose story is a part of you. So it's always about, first of all, knowing, and second, blending, integrating, because then what happens, you're creating your own story. So the important thing, I think, for the university is to understand the richness of the two stories, but also to understand the freedom that is theirs to create the story, which is the University of Detroit Mercy. So you do have to know the stories, but let me put it this way. The institution doesn't exist to continue the story of Ignatius and Catherine. It has the opportunity, because of their stories, to blend a certain set of values, a certain set of what I would say worldviews in the educational effort, which is really the center of the story of the university. So how can we educate so that persons come from the university who understand the value of contemplation and action, who understand hospitality, who understand the works of mercy. You see, in the Jesuit tradition, maybe who understand now, I think, what do they call them? The apostolic preferences. Yeah. So, you know, there are worldviews that these stories bring, but there's also the immediate University of Detroit Mercy uniqueness also. And it will create its own reality best if it understands the stories that are behind it. Is that clear? You can ask me another question. It's a challenge. Good.
Yeah.
I think let me maybe say this too. I don't know how political correct this will be, but it's a challenge because of the difference between male and female. I mean, congregations of religious men and congregations of religious women approach life quite differently. Mm-hmm. And in the church, of the Roman Catholic Church at least, part of that difference has been a certain privileging of male and a certain marginalization of women. The Sisters of Mercy have a different voice than the Society of Jesus. And within history, because of the male domination, a certain privileging of the one voice over the other. So to maintain a kind of an equality in this time going forward is the challenge of the whole world, actually. But within the Roman Catholic Church, it's a very real challenge also. And again, there's an opportunity here to show the blend because there's value in each viewpoint. The point is not about value. We're all created equal, let's put it that way. And the voices then need to be somehow recognized, yeah, starting with that point and then moving out from there.
Yeah. I appreciate you saying that. That is a very real reality in our church within Detroit Mercy's institution. And that exists very heavily in the ministry world as well. And in the work we do in university ministry, all of that resonates very clearly with me. And I'm sure it also resonates with Margo.
Good.
Okay. So our last question is, what lesson from Catherine McCauley's life has helped you transform your life? And if you have a favorite story, you can sure put that one in there too.
Okay. Oh my, that's a very good question, Margo, too. I think what has transformed me most in Catherine is her approach to leadership. I've spent a fair amount of time in administration and in leadership within our congregation. And I started my leadership at a time when we were beginning to see the church, but also in this wider society, that leaders could be much more collegial, could be much more attentive to subsidiarity, meaning let decisions be made at the level where there's expertise and experience and not always from the top down. We're much more aware of participative governance. And what I was delighted to find, and I've done some research on her leadership, was that Catherine had almost an innate sense of that type of leadership. And I'll tell a story here. And you mentioned this earlier, Anna, with the tea. She sat often with the whole community. Now, there were 100 less women, and probably at any one time, there were 20 or so gathered. But nonetheless, she sat with all of them, the newest and the one that was closest to her in terms of time, and discussed the works of the community, discussed new foundations, where they were going to go. She also had this sense all gifts were appropriate and all gifts were needed. And there's a lovely story when she's talking about Sister Aloysius. It's one of her letters. And what she says in the letter is, Sister Aloysius is knocking down walls and putting up plaster. And we finally found what it is she does best. Which suggests to me that there was a search going on to find the niche for Sister Aloysius, and Catherine was delighting in it. So I love that idea of her sense of, first of all, she knew her sisters well enough to know that this was happening. But secondly, she rejoiced for Sister Aloysius finding her niche. And then I'm sure she was going to kind of nurture that into the future. Now, there was a tradition in congregations of religious women that you would be considered mother superior. She never wanted that term. She wanted to be sister as everyone else was sister. Mm-hmm. And she didn't want any preferences in the seating order of the chapel or in the community room. So that whole sense of kind of the commonality of the work we're about, she did not neglect her gift as leader. But what she understood was when you lead, it's about the energy of the community. That's what you're leading. It's not about you. It's about the energy of the group and how they best both work together and work individually toward their full kind of flourishing. So I did find her leadership style. When I discovered it, I was delighted and very grateful for that. And of course, as a woman, she found her own voice in her own way. Personality-wise, she was not a confrontational individual. I would say assertive, but certainly not caustic in any way. She was very gracious. She was raised in a middle to upper middle class environment. And so she found courtesy and the natural kind of social graces important. But nonetheless, in two or three instances, when what she knew to be the important piece of work she was doing was thwarted, she rose to that occasion and said, "Nope, we're not going to do that. We've got our own integrity here." Now, she didn't use those words, but she did use that kind of mindset. And that was a little bit ahead of any kind of movement for feminism in the 19th century. Mm-hmm. All right.
So one of the things that we have asked all of our guests thus far are two questions that are about the mission of University of Detroit Mercy. And so obviously our mission is grounded in our Jesuit and Mercy identity. So our two questions are, and I'll ask you this first one first, is just what is your favorite part of the mission of the University of Detroit Mercy?
Well, I'm an educator, so I love learning. I love that piece of the university, that it is a center of learning, and that its faculty, as I have known some of them personally and also just have observed, are continually kind of pushing the boundaries of human knowledge, are finding ways to learn and relearn in order to provide our young people with the tools they need to get to move on from this experience to their rest of their life, as it were. But I think that's critical. It's the work of innovation in learning and the work of tradition in learning, you know, that we insist upon theology and philosophy, some of the basic human threads to a whole life, to a complete existence in literature, but that we also understand biochemistry and that we're pushing those real solid, what would you say, pools of knowledge forward with the rest of humanity and not fearing the new. So it's the education we do and the context in which we do it. So that I hope what I've seen at least is that we say it's not knowledge for knowledge's sake, it's knowledge for service. It's knowledge for a world that is growing, evolving, but has some dangerous edges to it if we are not able to bring value to what we know and to bring a certain sense of order to what we know. That's the part of the mission that excites me most and what I like to see develop. I'm also grateful that we've begun a journey of diversity, especially among the races. I think the Roman Catholic Church has not been at all in the forefront of anti-racism and welcoming communities of color, especially. We have a sad history that needs redemption. So I'm glad that we're beginning and have done work, some real work, toward the inclusion of all peoples and the respectful inclusion of all peoples. So that's a more modern kind of growth edge, but I'm glad to see us begin.
I have a side note question, though.
Okay. So
when you were teaching, what subjects or what classes did you teach?
Well, when I was teaching, I began teaching secondary education, and I was an English teacher and journalism, which I loved. So I had literature, and it wasn't the love of any of my students, but I loved the English. I loved writing. I loved the journalism. I did like newspaper, usually whatever school I was in, I did the yearbook in most schools. Then I went into administration in the congregation. And by the time I finished that, I was two generations at least removed from high school students. So I went back and got my PhD. I got it from the University of Iowa, which has one of the oldest schools of religion in the United States. And I had the track, which was religion and religious thought in the United States. Mm-hmm. So I felt it would prepare me for what I was going to do then was teach in higher education. But actually, I taught less and I administered more in the mission integration area there. But I had done a minor in women's studies at the University of Iowa, and they have a long history of working with women's studies from an historical point of view. So I was able to teach women's studies at Mount Aloysius and also taught some freshman experience courses, which were generally very enjoyable. So, but I have not done teaching since 2014. Did I answer the question? I think I lost the train there a bit. No, okay. Good.
You answered it. The other question, back on the topic of mission, is what motivates you as an individual to live out the mission?
Well, I suppose it's by this time my deep commitment to the Sisters of Mercy and to the, I think, gifts that we've been able to offer in the church through centuries, a couple of centuries at least, and a realization, I think, that the gifts are needed more today or as much today as they were in Catherine's time, that we have great needs, human needs. People are hungry still. People are seeking shelter still. Unfortunately, people are spiritually in doubt and in darkness, and there are too many people dying and too many of the creative world in which we find ourselves. Animals and species are dying. There's so many ways in which the spiritual and corporal works of mercy are now understood, not only just about individuals, but our very planet, our very systems of life, the ecosystems in which we find ourselves are also suffering in terms of their needs. So I think that continues to motivate me to do what I can as I move along the spectrum of human experience into old age. Not quite there yet, but moving along. But we do what we can do.
Okay, so now we're going to do the lightning round. These are pretty much just quick questions with quick answers. You don't have to explain anything. And you basically just have to say the first thing that comes to your mind.
Okay.
You ready?
Ready.
Sweet or salty?
Salty.
Okay. What was your first job?
Information desk at a hospital.
That was your first job?
Yeah.
I'm a Subway.
Well, maybe I should say babysitting. That was, I guess, I was thinking job. Babysitting was the very first. Thank you. That's a good recall. That's right.
If you could learn a new language, what would you choose?
Oh, well, I would have to say I would choose Spanish. I've tried several times, but I've not been able to. And the other language, although I don't know if we would think of it this way, is economics. I wish I understood the language of economics on the global level in a way that I don't now.
I could use that knowledge too. what is your favorite movie?
Oh, my. Oh, there would be so many. Well, you know, I go way back to Dr. Zhivago. That was a wonderful one. I like movies that have strong characters. I don't know if you ever remember the one Julia. That was a good movie many years back. Let me think if I can think of something more recent. Oh, dear. I haven't gone to a lot recently.
It doesn't have to be recent. That's okay.
Okay, we got two.
Yeah, your favorite movies are your favorite movies.
That's right. There you go. That I would watch again. That's right. That I would watch again. Yeah.
Okay. Invisibility or super strength? The hard one.
I think invisibility.
Okay. What is your current favorite song?
You know, I've always loved, and I think it's still my favorite, Bette Midler's The Rose. Oh. You probably don't even know that one. But
I know Bette Midler. I don't know if I know The Rose. who is your hero? And it cannot be Catherine McCauley. It has to be someone else.
Oh, Well, I'll tell you, growing up, well, not growing up, but in high school and through much of my early years, even as a teacher, was Eleanor Roosevelt. She was a woman who knew herself and grew from a very shy woman into a leader. And I always liked her. I liked her story. I read her biography. Yeah.
Okay. What was your favorite word?
I love the word word. I love it because in scripture, in the beginning was the word. And the word was with God. But I always think about the power of every word. I'm an English teacher of literature, but I also love writing. So the word, word.
Is your favorite word.
It's a favorite word.
Yeah. There you go. You just alluded to scripture, and our next question was, do you have a favorite line from scripture? And if you do, what is it?
Be still and know that I am God.
Ooh, that's a good one.
I can't tell you where it comes from, but that's my, no, it's in the Old Testament.
Somewhere.
Be still and know that I am God.
What saints would you like to talk to if you could?
Well, of course, I'd like to talk to Catherine. I'd like to talk to Catherine of Siena also, and probably the one I'd be a little intimidated, but I'd like to talk to Teresa of Avila. I think she might have been quite a character and probably a dominant figure, but yes.
Do you have a favorite holiday?
You know, Thanksgiving. I like Thanksgiving a lot.
Yeah. What is the best advice you have ever received?
Oh, my.
This one usually can be a little bit of a longer answer.
Well, I'll give you two pieces. One was from my mother early on and several times. Do the best you can. The other was from a mentor, one of my educators when I was early in leadership. And she said, be very attentive to those that you are not aware of. And I thought it was a bit of a paradox, but I understood it. She said it in different ways, was you really have to be watching the persons who aren't in your radar, as it were, looking for them, bringing them in, being attentive to those that you do not see is another way I think of saying it. I thought that was good advice. It helped me understand that it's not just about the people, as we say, the squeaky wheels or the people that are in your face or in your comfort level, but it's other people beyond that orbit that you might be most attentive to. I thought that was good advice.
That is good advice.
Good. Good, Margaret.
Well, that ends the lightning round, which formally ends our time together. I just want to say thank you to you, Sister Helen Marie, for coming on, for taking the time. I know it was a lot of back and forth emails to make this happen, but we're so appreciative. And it was just really wonderful talking with you today.
My pleasure. And I thank the two of you, Margo and Anna, your wonderful interviewers. I appreciate making me very comfortable. Wish you well.
Thank you so much.
That was a very wonderful session talking with Sister Helen Marie. I actually enjoyed the part where she talked about the advice that was given to her. She said something like, pay attention to the people that you aren't aware of. And I've never heard that before, like I said earlier, but it's just like, how am I supposed to pay attention to people who I'm already not aware of? And how do you become aware of people that you aren't aware of if you're aware of what you're aware of?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the challenge of what she was saying is like, maybe it's not that you're not aware of them. I mean, you're in your initial thought process, maybe you're not aware, but this is my interpretation of what she said. Whoever gave her that advice was calling her to think about the groups of people that don't quickly come to your mind. Like in her work, you know, she was working in the upper administration and congregational leadership of the Sisters of Mercy. Who were the groups of people that weren't immediately coming to her mind as people that she was working with or for? I think for us in our context at Detroit Mercy, it's, you know, who are we not paying attention to? Maybe it's a fellow student, a friend who we haven't talked to in a while, or maybe for me on the staff side of things, who's the colleague I haven't thought about or connected with, or who are the group of colleagues or a department that maybe I haven't reached out to and seen if there's ways that we could collaborate. I don't know if that's what she intended or she meant, but that's kind of what it had me thinking mostly about.
That's really nice.
Yeah, I think it's a great piece of advice. I really enjoyed hearing from her. Just more about Catherine, more about the Sisters of Mercy. I think she does a really good job talking about the Sisters of Mercy. She helped lead the university ministry staff in a little Advent retreat day. And there were some other colleagues from the university. And she did such a good job of just talking about the history of the Sisters of Mercy, which was evident today in our conversation with her. But also just like really attentive. I think she's got a gift. And even though she was worried about political correctness, I appreciate her calling out the reality of gender inequality in our church. I think that needed to be noted, especially in the challenging but also beautiful relationship of being a school that has a congregation of women who sponsor and a congregation or a group of men that sponsor us, a group of priests. So she's pretty cool, pretty amazing person. And I'm glad we had the chance to talk with her today.
Same. If there's any other Sisters of Mercy listening, you are welcome to come on the podcast.
Yes. Anytime, for sure.
I think it also kind of just reminded me on the podcast that we were on with Father Gilbert, the importance of having that empty rooftop. Guys, I'm going to have to reiterate it again. You got to get yourself an empty rooftop that you can just take the stairs and go on so that you can think about those people that you don't have the chance to think about. This is me advertising you guys to have rooftop. Very, very important in life. You've been listening to What's the Tea with Ministry. If you enjoy listening to us today, be sure to subscribe so that you never miss an episode. Also, be sure to follow us on social media at @UDM_ministry, or check us out at What's the Tea with Ministry podcast on the Detroit Mercy website.
Thank you to our guest, Sister Helen Marie Burns, for being in conversation with us today. Thank you also to all those who have made this podcast possible, especially the Communication Studies Department, our sound engineer, Michael Jason, marketing and communications, and the whole Detroit Mercy community.
We look forward to sharing more of the mission with you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.